From time to time, you hear the stories of important chunks of land getting protected from development. Everything from conservation easements to outright purchases put sensitive lands out of reach of damage and often lead to their rehabilitation. And you hear the stories and wonder, when can I get to see those lands? The answer is this Saturday. This will be the latest iteration of Get Outdoors Oregon Day, featuring the work of Oregon's land trusts and conservancies. They'll show off their work all over the state. We'll focus on offerings in the Willamette and Rogue Valleys with Kathy Dombey, the executive director of the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy, in the studio with me. Kathy, good to see you.
Good morning.
And Joe Moll is on the phone with us. He's the executive director of the Mackenzie River Trust. Hi, Joe.
Good morning.
Good to have you both back with us. Kathy, actually, this is your first time joining us as the executive director of the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy.
It is. I'm a little bit of a greenhorn here at the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy. But we really appreciate being able to talk about Get Outdoors Day this weekend.
It must be exciting to take a part in an organization like this, given what it does.
It really was a great honor. I came on board last July. I followed Diane Garcia, who was our executive director for 14 years. We are a Jackson and Josephine County-based organization. I have always loved the outdoors. I spent a lot of time working and bringing students in the outdoors and hopefully creating conservation advocates for the future. So I was really pleased to be able to step into this role and work in our community to protect the beauty that we have here in Southern Oregon.
Okay, so your tenure plus Diane Garcia's equals 15 years, but the Land Conservancy is older than that, isn't it?
We are very old, actually. This is our 40th year. We were founded in 1978, and for the first 20 years, we were essentially volunteer-run. And we can proudly say that many of those volunteers who started with us in 1978 are still with us, which I think makes us a very strong community. We have new members that have been here 10 years, and then, of course, the folks that have stuck with us over 40 years gives us a real strength in this community, a good integrity and reputation.
That's a lot of continuity. Do you have a lot of land that you've protected, too?
We have protected over 10,000 acres in that time. We're currently working on an additional 500 acres. And last year, we purchased, right before I came on, we purchased the 350-acre Rogue River Preserve, which is right near Dodge Bridge Park, which a lot of our local folks are familiar with in Eagle Point.
And this is actually the place you're going to be leading people out to this weekend, one of the two?
We will be doing some restoration work on the Rogue River Preserve. It is not open to the public. We do open to the public for guided events such as this. So this is an opportunity for the community to see this incredible land on the Rogue and also to give back. And we're going to be doing some invasive weed removal. It's a partnership with the BLM, Jackson County Parks, the Rogue Siskiyou National Forest, and the Siskiyou chapter of the Native Plant Society. It's an annual event, and this year we're really happy that we get to do work on the Rogue River Preserve.
Well, it seems like in the case of both the Land Conservancy and Land Trust, Mackenzie River Trust, the river runs through it. Joe Moll, tell us a bit about your organization and what you've done over the years.
Sure, thanks for the opportunity. You know, the Mackenzie River Trust has been around not quite as long. We're approaching we started in 1989, but very similar model. The name is still limited to the Mackenzie, but we work throughout Lane County and Douglas County, a little bit into Lynn and Benton, and out of the coast to Lincoln County as well. And we've just found similarly that there are landowners that are very interested in making sure that the values of their land, not just personal, but the public values, the recreational opportunities, the habitat that they provide, the backdrop to a cityscape, are something they want to ensure, and the Land Trust model has been able to do that. We've had a hand in the conservation of about 5,000 or so acres in a mix of easements and outright owned properties. And I've been with the Mackenzie River Trust for 13 and a half years now, and at our Green Island property, where our Get Outdoors Day projects will be focused this weekend, it's been wonderful to have the time, even over the decade of restoration work that we've put in there, to just watch two things happen. One, the land just transform with the growth of the trees or the new meanders of the river after a dike has been removed. And two, to see how people have made it their own. It's not just the Mackenzie River Trust. It might say that on paper, but people have adopted this and really made it their own by being involved in the tree plantings, by helping pull weeds, and by coming out and celebrating these places. And it's just wonderful to be able to see that growth within the community.
Well, let's talk about the Green Island. Is this an area that had been farmed at one time?
It was. The name Green Island comes from the Green family, which in the 1930s began to clear land at the confluence of the Mackenzie and the Willamette Rivers. And they spent the next 70-plus years on a productive farm there, but always, quite frankly, fighting the river, in their words. And in the early 2000s, with some change in the farming landscape here, the family decided to no longer farm. They had opportunities to see it developed, but instead came to the trust and said, you know, we'd like to see this go back to the river, essentially. The river as a confluence area is constantly shifting channels, constantly flooding. And so it's a great opportunity for us to use it as a sort of a test case for wide river floodplain restoration. In some places, the river meanders over the course, the width of a mile over different seasons. And for the health of just clean water, the health of Chinook salmon, to attenuate the power of floods, these wide floodplains are really important. So Green Island has become an anchor for that sort of work throughout the Willamette Valley.
If the river is being allowed to act more naturally, is there a chance there might not be a Green Island someday, or it be a very different island?
Absolutely. It's really fascinating to look at some of the first aerial photographs we have from the 1930s all the way through now. And you see, prior to dams being built in the Willamette River system, there were much more spiky floods, let's say. And the channels were very different. Green Island is Green Island because the Mackenzie River used to flow an additional 4.5 miles around to the east. That changed in 1964 with a major flood that moved the confluence of the river 4.5 miles upstream. But the river is getting back into that channel, and it likely will again. And so in any given year, we might lose land. We might gain land simply because the river comes through and does its work on a seasonal basis.
So we're talking about land trusts and land conservancies. We have Joe Moll, the executive director of the Mackenzie River Trust, with us. Kathy Dombey, the executive director of the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy. This coming Saturday, June 9th, is Get Outdoors Oregon Day, and we have events to talk about going on with both organizations. You can join us on the exchange. Questions, comments about land conservation and its process and the areas that have been preserved. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Kathy Dombey, is it often farmland that ends up being preserved through the conservation easements and trusts and purchases?
I don't know if often is the right word. I mean, we have a mix of farmland, but we also have a lot of wooded timber areas that are still in operation. We have riverbed, you know, riparian areas. So farms are an important aspect of it, but this is Oregon, so we do have a lot of timberland that we're working with landowners to sustainably harvest and protect and to steward and grow the health of our forests in Southern Oregon.
Of the 10,000 acres that you were saying that have been protected by the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy, is that a mix of ownership and conservation easement?
Primarily, those are all privately owned conserved properties with conservation agreements protecting them. And it's a sort of a patchwork or a quilt of properties that often are either buffering public lands or connecting private and public lands, creating wildlife corridors for plants and animals.
The idea being there's some connectivity here between areas of high value and high value.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, nature doesn't exist in a vacuum, so we need to make sure that plants and animals have those wildlife corridors to interconnect with different environments throughout our community.
So talk about the creation of conservation easements. This is there a changing of hands of any money in the process? And the easement actually stays with the property regardless of who owns it from
the easement
the rest
stays
of time,
with
right?
the property. So we do have landowners who might be the second, third, or fourth landowner of a conserved property. And there are some costs associated with it. It's a legal agreement. So our staff facilitates the legal part of all of it and advises the landowner. We take a look at what the conditions of the property are. You can't just conserve any property. There has to be some conservation values that benefit the public, whether it's a view shed or we're protecting special species, we're protecting agricultural land. And then also we have to monitor the property. So we create a reserved fund for every property in order to help us meet our expenses of sending staff out on an annual basis to evaluate the property, advise the landowners, and see what we can do to help them enhance the conservation values of their land.
So it is just an annual check-in. This is not a frequent, like, you know, week-by-week, month-by-month thing.
It is annual, but I can tell you that we often go out twice a year. We're frequently talking with landowners on the phone, giving them advice. There's funding out there sometimes for restoration work on their property. And oftentimes we're doing some restoration work with the landowner. So even though we're only required once a year, we have a constant back and forth with the landowners, helping them with their properties.
Joe Moll, how intense does it get sometimes to get into negotiations with people on property and B, make sure that the property is being well tended?
You know, I don't know that I'd say intense. If anything, it's a little bit kind of the reverse of that. It takes time, you know, for an individual landowner, even one that is really excited to put something into long-term conservation. It's a big decision, and we advise that to, you know, really think about it, because the development potential, for example, that might be taken away is something that has implications down the line, not just for that piece of land, but perhaps for the community. And so rather than intensity, it's kind of a long, thoughtful process at times to think about the what-ifs, the different scenarios. Well, you mentioned, Jeff, what happens if the river comes through and takes out half of this land? Are we comfortable with that? And how do you write that into a legal agreement that an attorney is looking at with a landowner 100 years from now is going to be able to interpret? So that's where the real legwork is. We find then that in the annual or biannual or as frequently as landowners would like us to come visit, in those visits as well, there's a sharing that goes on. It's, hey, look what I found. Look what I've learned about this land. And so rather than intensity, it's a little bit more of an organic relationship. These agreements are long-term relationships. And so you sort of discover what's going on out there. And that's the real beauty of it for us. I mean, the landowners that are on the land on a daily basis are seeing and learning, and on a seasonal basis, watching it change. And that helps us as an organization with those scenarios. Oh, we forgot about what could happen. Now let's think about it in the next deal we're trying to do.
Are there situations in which people have offered to put conservation easements on land and you had to say no thanks?
Yeah, that quite frankly happens more frequently than you would imagine. Kathy mentioned the public values. When we look at a piece of property, and somebody may say, I've owned this land for a long time. It's important to our family. We have some big trees. But say, for example, you look at what surrounds it, and if it's surrounded by really heavy industrialized land or perhaps really commercial timber, the prospect of keeping those public values going long-term becomes difficult or, quite frankly, very expensive. And in those cases, we have to say that just doesn't fit. Or maybe it's far away from a project area we're already working, and so the added costs of trying to work with the landowner are different. Usually in those cases, though, there are enough conservation organizations, whether land trusts or state agencies or watershed councils or soil and water conservation districts. The conservation network is really strengthening through collaboration, and so we frequently will just hand those relationships off and introduce the landowner to another organization that may be able to help them with their goals.
We're talking about land trusts, land conservancies. Joe Moll is the executive director of the Mackenzie River Trust. Kathy Dombey, the executive director of the Southern Oregon Land Conservancy. Both will be involved in Saturday's Get Outdoors Oregon Day, where land trusts and conservancies all over the state are opening the doors where there are no doors. I'm aware of that fact. But you get the metaphysical idea here, to let people get a look at the trust lands that are out there being protected. You can join the conversation on the exchange, talk about lands you're proposing for protection or times you've visited some of these lands. We'd like to hear your story. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email. It's jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Connie and Eugene. Welcome to the exchange.
Hi, great to hear the program. I just have a question. It's of concern up here in any areas along rivers or former riverbeds, and that's the rights for gravel and sand extraction. And I know in other areas it's mining rights. And so I wonder how when you have a landowner who he or she may own the top of the land, so to speak, the farm or the timber, but someone else has access or can access the mineral or gravel rights. How do you deal with that?
Wow, that could get interesting. Thanks for that question.
Thank you.
Appreciate that. Joe?
Yeah, it's a great question. And all over the West, where you have a long history of land that where those rights were all held in one entity, and over time, sometimes they've been segregated, they've been split away. And so, just as with any land negotiation, we sit down and talk about the options, and very often those become, quite frankly, maybe this is the intensity question you're asking, Jeffrey, they become pretty expensive negotiation questions. And so we have acquired land that has, for example, at Green Island, we added about a 60-acre piece that was an active gravel mine and had rights for continued gravel operation. The cost of that 60-acre piece was almost equivalent to the cost of the original 860-acre piece that didn't have the gravel rights associated with it. So you have to make some decisions about that trade-off between the financial costs and the conservation benefit that we get long-term. This was a critical piece for us where the river that created the river coming through historically created that gravel mining opportunity, and we see the river coming back through there now. And so it was just a strategic decision. I think what's critical that the land trust community tries to do is to not be so judgmental about what's being done here, there, and everywhere, that we're able to sit down and talk with anybody, any political persuasion, about that. Because ultimately, those decisions about what we do with our land and resources, they're community-wide decisions. They're not community of interest decisions. And land trusts are pretty apolitical in that sense, and we welcome conversations with anyone about natural resources.
Kathy Dombey, when a farmland, for example, is brought into trust, I mean, does it cease to be farmland? Does it cease to be a working farm, or can it still be used for those purposes? I'm just curious to know what the actions upon the land are.
Well, one of the best parts about a conservation easement is that it remains working lands if the landowner chooses that. We might work with a farmland, and we might look at areas that maybe have high sensitivity, and we would have maybe stronger restrictions in that area. We would encourage a farmer, if they had a riparian area, that would not be an area that they would use to graze or to farm on, that they would restore the riparian area. But you can continue to farm on your lands. The Eagle Mill Farms here in Ashland is an example of a farm that is conserved, but is an active working farm. So we would just look at the areas and work with the farm owner to create a good easement that works for all the parts of the land.
Do people ever ask, well, it's great that you've conserved this land for the good of us all, but then us all doesn't get to see it more than once a year?
Well, it is different than public lands, and, you know, sort of the hybrid between private-owned lands and public lands where, you know, we can go out in the national forest. So this gives a landowner an opportunity to be a part of that conservation system. However, it does remain in private ownership, and we do have to respect that. There are a number of places that are willing to give tours of their lands. We have over 400 acres here in Jacksonville, in Ashland, and even in Central Point that are conserved properties that are actually owned. Siskiyou Mountain Park and Oradson Todd are owned by the city of Ashland. Hundreds of people benefit daily by the trail system there. That we hold easements on those properties, and we help the city acquire those properties. In Jacksonville, you have Brittwoods, Beekman Woods, and other trail system that are also conserved properties. So we look for those public access properties, but we also have to keep in mind that the primary issue here is conservation, and sometimes a lot of people on the land isn't the best benefit for that. So we have to respect that balance between getting folks outdoors and also conserving the property and keeping it safe for the animals and plants.
Yeah, humans do have impacts too, no question. So what are the places you're beginning showing people? You have two events. Dodge Bridge is one that we mentioned already.
At Dodge Bridge is near Rogue River Preserve. The property that we purchased last year is adjacent to Dodge Bridge Park. Everyone will be meeting at the Rogue River Preserve. You can go to our website, landconserve.org, and there's a registration process for the Let's Pull Together. It's open registration. We just want to know who's coming and how many, so we're prepared with snacks, water, gloves, and whatnot for folks to help out. And so once you register, you'll get directions to the property. It starts at 9 in the morning. Mm-hmm. Kids are welcome. Families are welcome. People of all ages are welcome. There'll be something for everyone to do. And again, it's a magnificent property. You might get a good sighting of our ospreys or our eagles that are out there. And just make new friends and have fun and feel good about the work that you do that morning.
And you have an event at Cathedral Hills, too?
We do. That is a small hike led by Tom Atzett, a forest ecologist. That hike, unfortunately, is full.
Ah, okay.
We do offer hikes throughout the spring and the fall, and it's a challenge because we'd love to have everyone on that hike, but as you know, we want to keep the experience special, so we usually have about 15 people on those hikes, and I can tell you our waiting lists are usually twice as long as our capacity.
Wow. Joe Mall, tell us about the Green Island thing, because that actually starts at 7 in the morning, is that right?
It does. Green Island is a great place to bird, and so we get usually 100 or so people right at the gates right at the beginning to come on some guided bird walks. And then throughout the day, we have naturalists giving different walks, looking at native plants. I'll give a general conservation tour. There's a mammal walk, dragonflies, birds and bugs. And then there are just places or opportunities for people to do a couple of things, visit with each other and find common interests and just talk about it, a place we call the Hub, which will have some food carts and some places for picnic, and then also just to walk about, to go out on your own and explore. I mean, this is a 1,200-acre property and miles of riverfront and side channels and little hidden nooks, and that exploration is really one of the best parts of the day. It's really what we encourage people to do.
Get Outdoors Oregon Day this Saturday the 9th. The gates open at the Green Island property for the Mackenzie River Trust at 7 in the morning. You are requested, if you're going to go to the Dodge Bridge event, to sign up. That's at 9 o'clock in the morning. All the sign-ups available through the page for the Collective of Oregon Land Trusts, which is set up through our website as well, jeffexchange.org. Kathy Dombey, Executive Director of Southern Oregon Land Conservancy, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
And Joe Mall, Executive Director at Mackenzie River Trust, thank you for joining us.